Well, very good evening, everybody. It's Ivan Hurley in for Donal Barry on Terrace Talk this evening. We must send Donal Barry away a bit more often, lads, because with results like that the weekend, we might leave Donal Barry in Spain. But it's Ivan with you until 8 o'clock this evening, of course, looking back in the first hour on what was a fantastic victory for Kerry into the All-Ireland semi-final after beating Tyrone 2-18 to 12 points in Croke Park on Saturday. And, of course, the Kerry ladies as well securing their home quarter-final. We'll talk to Dan Kearney a little earlier on, who made his debut on commentary on Saturday and did a very good job of Breed O'Shea, I must say. So we'll be chatting to Dan a little later on and to give his view on the opposition that Kerry be meeting me, the course, as well. If you have any views, you can give us a call. Keane is taking over the phones for me this evening. It's 066 712 3666, or you can text 083 300 3300. We're on WhatsApp on that number as well, or if you want to pop an email if you're out and about overseas, maybe you want to email in the show, you can, of course. It's terracetalk@radiokerry.ie. But we're of course going to focus first and foremost on Kerry's victory, of course, in that All-Ireland senior football quarter final, beating Tyrone comfortably in the end, 2-18 to 12 points. Joining us this evening as ever, John Kennedy and Liam Brosson, and we brought in Dinny Long as well. We might be nice to Dinny this evening on Cork a little later on, but we'll get his views on Kerry first. Lads, you're very welcome to the studio as always.
Evening, Kevin.
Liam, I think we chatted to death on Saturday. People will be sick of me and you chatting, but look, now that we've had a bit of time to this, that, you know, it's a great second half performance from Kerry and into the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, a fantastic weekend of football for the ladies and the men's, and the performance of our senior men's really on Saturday. I won't say, well, I suppose I will, it surprised a lot of us. We knew we were going well after the low came, but I, like I said to you just before the game when we were talking, I thought, look, a 1 or 2 point victory would be a good victory for us, but no one saw the performance in the second half when Kerry came out. And more, it was something like Dublin yesterday as well, you know, they just left the traps in the first 10 or 15 minutes, the third quarter you could say, and Tyrone had no answer to us. No, they couldn't, like the old Tyrone teams where they could lay a hand on you, they couldn't get near us. No, and that comes down to obviously credit to the management and to the players themselves. But we kicked the ball. You know, we played football. We didn't run into blind alleys. We didn't run into heavy tackles to get to get knocked down. We kicked the ball, and we, you know, we did a Tyrone on Tyrone. You know, like we said before, Tyrone always bring physicality, and you know, and they're mentally very tough as well. But it was the opposite last day. We were the physicality that we bought, the turnovers. Like, I was just looking at a few stats. I think we turned them over 24 times. No, and I think someone said today actually we got, was it something like 111 out of the turnovers, and they only turned us over 14 times. No, so that was a huge stat there for Kerry straight away, and you knew by defensively our defensive structure was back to where we were last year when we won All Ireland, and I think that was the catalyst for that victory the weekend.
Absolutely. Look, I think you chatted before the game Saturday, you mentioned Kerry were warming up while we were chatting, that they were doing plenty of kick passing to warm up, so it was something that Jack obviously talked about in training. The build up was something that they were ready for, and ready for that kicking game.
Yeah, and you could see that, and like we said last day, the loud warm up as well, and John was watching it as well. It's not, there was more intensity with us, you know, that it was all kick passing, but Jack was in the middle. That's what I liked about it. Jack was in the middle of it. He was doing the kick, he was doing the organising, he was doing the, you could see there was a buzz, and it was the same the last day above. We were watching Tyrone, they were doing their warm up, they were banging off each other, they were hitting each other's shoulders, you know, they were hitting out their chests off each other. But you look up at the other side of the field, Kerry were kicking the ball at speed, you know, so you knew what way teams were going to play, and that's the way it kind of panned out in the end. They couldn't get near us to hit us because we were moving the ball so well.
John, 3 points up at half time. Was that what you were expecting going into it? Were you at half time, were you thinking it's there for Kerry now? What was your view on it?
Yeah, similar to Liam. Look, I think, and the general consensus was it was going to be a tough game, you know, and quite happy with the first half performance. As he said, the body language of Kerry was, you know, there was a buzz about him. The defensive structure was excellent. Tadhg Marley was back to what he did last year, you know, all the other backs, but the midfielders were coming back. Darren Moynihan was coming back, Adrian Spillane, you know, there was a structure to it, there was an intensity to it, and we used the ball very well. The kick passing was excellent, but you know, the start of the second half we kicked a couple of points and then we got the goal, and then it was, you know, you had the cushion then, you could kick on and express yourself.
They were chasing
and they were chasing all the time, and their marquee players, we'll say the Canavans, look, Matty Donnelly, they were blotted out of it. You know, our matchups were excellent. the physicality in the tackle. You know, we worked extremely hard, and you know, it was, I suppose it has been said numerous times since Saturday, Dermot O'Connor in the middle of the field, you know, he's now playing the football that we know he's capable of playing. We've been saying here for a bit about Kerry, disappointing. We know the ability is there, you know, and for whatever reason, but it's not a coincidence, I think, that in the game against Louth and Saturday, it's championship football now. It's knockout football. There's no more shadow boxing. And like Liam said, you know, Jack was in the middle of it. You know, there was an intensity about everything they did. There was a structure about it. And, you know, some fantastic individual displays. But again, no more than Louth, you'd have to say, really disappointing from Tyrone.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking away from Kerry, they were really blotted out of it in the second half. They didn't put a hand on us, you know. They were struggling. They were second to every ball, and we dominated totally. And you know, it was a huge boost going into semi final against Kerry. A workmanlike performance, you know, showed that we are champions. And put down a marker again.
Is it a testament to Kerry and the way we set up that we didn't allow Tyrone have that chances, and we were forced to every ball? Is that a lot of credit down to Kerry on that front as well?
There's no doubt, and there's great credit due to the management team and to the training people, because you know, obviously we were behind. We said that during the league, but it looks as if they've got it spot on. A month to go in the All Ireland series, and we're really boiling now. And you know, I don't think we got any injuries the weekend. It's falling into place, and certainly we're the champions to be dethroned, and it'll take a very good team and a very good display to beat us.
Absolutely. Didn't you, I was chatting to Liam, and you know, at half time and on Saturday, and Kerry were after going on a run of three scores, and it was 6 points apiece, then we went 9 points to six up at half time, and then going through, it was 24 minutes without a Tyrone score, and in that time Kerry scored 1-8. And that's the winning and losing of a game there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, because as the lads were saying there, Ivan, you know, we were all expecting, all the fellas, man, woman and child, were going up to see a tough encounter, and Tyrone being Tyrone would be in your face, and you know, hunting and chasing and all that. That didn't materialise, which was very unusual, but not, you know, Kerry performance was exceptional. Like I was saying to the lads there, you would rate them all 10 out of 10 practically on the day. And I think the other thing maybe that, you know, Kerry have played Tyrone so many times, and the present crop of players probably didn't play them that many times, but they'd be watching it in television and hearing about it. I think they stood up, and I think the big thing for me was the kicking. They didn't allow themselves to solo into to Tyrone. They kicked it quick, so Tyrone didn't have time to bunch tackle or get in around a player. So, you know, from a tactical point of view, Kerry were absolutely spot on. Tyrone, obviously, not taking from Kerry's win, but you know, we watched Tyrone for 20 years since they came in 2003, and that was a shadow of Tyrone, but that's not taking from Kerry's win. Everything Kerry did was good. They were good in the tackle, they were good all over the field, and I suppose the big plus for them was that the two lads in the middle of the field who had come in for a lot of punishment and a lot of stick, you know, they stood up, particularly Dermot O'Connor had a fine game, kicked 1-2, you know, what more could he do? But, you know, I saw him 6 months ago, or maybe more, walking down the town or somewhere. I didn't realise he was such a big physical man. So, you know, he's 23 or 24, whatever he is now. So he's coming into the top of his career, and, you know, he can only probably get better.
It's the style of football you want to see played, didn't you? I remember saying before you didn't like managers calling about minding the ball and hand passes. It's the style of football that you like watching.
I do, yeah, because, you know, the game is meant to be enjoyable, and it's enjoyable for the players and obviously enjoyable for the people going in paying their money, and, you know, people listening in radio and watching it on television. And it was a bit refreshing to see that Kerry were, you know, Kerry are well capable of kicking, and, you know, I saw the two lads here on my left playing, and if you know any Kerry footballer, a bit of time and a bit of space, he'll absolutely murder you, like. So, you know, if you don't get in around them, they're going to cause you problems, because they all can play. You don't get a Kerry jersey unless you have a lot of things going for you, and that's the way it should be. But I was delighted to see more kicking in the game, and I think it's only good for the game. And, you know, we saw it from Dublin as well, you know, so they're probably the two best teams. I know people will be talking about Derry and Mallin, but for me, Dublin and Kerry are a good bit ahead of the two teams that are left.
And that style of football, definitely. Liam, I suppose going back to this, you know, before the game, obviously, it was built to be that tight contest. Did Tyrone maybe come into the game thinking that Kerry were maybe a wounded animal after looking at maybe the group stage and seeing that defeat to Mayo in Clarny, which wasn't expected by anyone, and then maybe that narrow victory over Cork, and then obviously the loud game was the loud game. But did Tyrone maybe think Kerry were a bit weaker than what they were?
Well, I suppose if you were looking at the games, if you were the opposition manager, you were looking at the Monaghan game, you were looking at the league performance first, where Kerry didn't light it up too much. You were looking at the Monaghan game, the Mayo game, where we were beat well. And then you were looking at the Cork game, where we didn't really kind of light up the place. And then Louth, and if you're the Tyrone manager saying, right, Louth, you know, you wouldn't be getting overly excited about it. So you're saying Kerry aren't motoring that well. Mm-hmm. But like, you could see Kerry just left out. It was like a spring being released, you know, against the Louth, and it was the same yesterday. And what I liked about yesterday even was that, you know, we had 25 shots at goals and we had 13 scores. Sorry, no. We 25 shots from play at goals, and we 13 scores from play. Mm. Like, we were before, we were kind of passing the ball. When we got into our wides that we kicked, they were, as I would say, they were good wides. No, there were shots where you had to take. Whereas Adrian Splann came up now and he kicked 2 points yesterday. Damien O'Connor came in and kicked 1-2. During the league, we were kind of passing that ball sideways, or we were waiting for somebody else to come and kick that score. We were taking the shots. Fellas were stepping up to the plate and taking the shots. We weren't dependent on David Clifford. And like, everyone was saying we were a one-man team. And we were kind of proving now that we aren't a one-man team. And like Dinny said, when you put on a Kerry jersey, you know, all these guys can play football. And it's kind of second nature to us to be playing backwards and over and back to field. I know there's times you have to do it, but it just proved yesterday that when we do move the ball, you know, we can create magic. And when you have the likes of David Clifford, Sean O'Shea, Paul Gainey, and all these natural forwards, now, and I suppose we're blessed in Kerry that we have natural forwards. You go to county league matches all over the county and you will see natural forwards, guys that probably who should be getting Kerry team time and they can't get on Kerry teams or whatever, but they're just natural forwards. And I think we have that in abundance here in Kerry, and I think that's the difference between us and every other team. And Dublin are probably with us as well, and Galway, they'd be three good footballing counties, and I think we have the players, so we don't want to be drawn into these battles of over and back and back and over and all this kind of crack. When we moved the ball, it was lovely to watch Saturday. No, I know people are going to say question Tyrone, how good Tyrone were, but if you move the ball like that, there are many teams that are going to stay with us.
Mm-hmm. Looking at it, I think, you know, David and Paddy were probably marked well out of it by Tyrone. Were they watching, you know, those two maybe too much and leave a bit of space for the other forwards as well?
Yeah, and to see David and Paddy, even though they were marked, if you go back in the video and watch it, like, they had a hand in everything, the two of them. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and David is probably one of the most unselfish players you will ever meet, because he will always give the right pass, the right decision. He won't try to kick one tin himself. He'd like to see somebody else kick one tin. You know, that's the way David is. And Paddy's the same. Some of the passes they do, and they will draw a lot of attention. And that's when you need other guys to step up to the plate. And I think that's happening at the moment. You know, and it came really, and like John said at the start, our defensive structure that we had last year is back. Tadhg Marley was sitting in front of the D yesterday. You had our midfielders sitting in front of Tadhg Marley. You know, everyone, we looked very comfortable. I don't know, is it something that we knew we were going to do in come quarter final stage and we were holding it back? But it looked very good. It looked like something we were doing all year. You know, everyone was very comfortable. We were very tenacious on the tackle, and when we turned them over, we tacked at speed because we used the foot pass, and it was like Kerry last year all over again.
Absolutely. Just looking at a couple of texts starting to filter in. I think a night that Kerry are victorious, the text line to be a small bit quieter, or else they just listen to Donald one or the other. But it's Hive and great performance from Kerry, but can't get carried away yet. There will be a tough nut to crack. The GA are shooting themselves in the foot, having David Clifford behind the paywall for most of the championship. That's from Charles. Yeah, hi Charles, thanks for tuning in this evening. Yeah, you're probably right. Now we might have a chat about that a little later on, but of course you're free to air, no paywall here on Radio Kerry or commentary or Terrace Talk. Congrats to Jack and the backroom team and the players. Great performance at Croke Park. You'll be proud to be from Kerry walking out of Croke Park. And that's Katrina and Tralee. That done a lot to maybe beating Tyrone now. Is that little sting in a game against Tyrone as well, that you'd be proudly wearing the green and gold after a victory?
monkey off the back, I think. And I think Jack was kind of happy as well, because it was always kind of a thing that was hanging over him. But yeah, and look, I suppose, look, it's no big secret that there is a bit of, there is a bit of, yeah, between Kerry and Tyrone, even for the supporters, and you can ask Ambrose that. There's no love lost, and every time we kind of win that game, you come away smiling, all right.
I might try to grab a clip from the last time we played a league game in Ove earlier this year with Ambrose. I might get Keane maybe to get that for later on. But we must go for a quick break, but after that we'll get Dan Kearney into the conversation. Of course, fantastic win for the Kerry ladies as well, not forgetting them, and Dan chat a bit how that game went, and about Mead as well. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Hey, welcome back to Terrace Talk. You can give us a call, 066 712 3666. Keen on the phones there. You can text or WhatsApp your views to 083 300 3300. Plenty still come in, and we get all your comments before the end of the show this evening. But it's time now to turn back to the ladies for a couple of minutes. Of course, a fantastic win over Cavan, 221 to 2-5 in the end. Kerry securing that home quarter final, which will be against Mead, formidable opposition in ladies football, and a fantastic occasion on the same weekend. Of course, the men will be taking on Derry as well, so sure to be another feast of football. Joining me now is Dan Kearney, of course, who was on commentary duty for us on Saturday, his debut on commentary. I must say he did very well. Dan, I hear that you were missed the start of the men's game. You were still so busy signing autographs coming out of Austin Stack Park.
I think that's a bit of fake news now, to be honest about it. Like, it's running away from me, they'd be like, you know, but I know I enjoyed it now, and, you know, it was great that Kerry got the win. And in fairness to them, they played great football. And, you know, I know the scoreline you'd say that Cavan were pretty poor, but, you know, they weren't bad. They put it up to Kerry at times, particularly, I suppose, in the early stages of the game. So they're quite a young side, you know, bar one or two experienced players like Geraldine Sheridan, Ashton Sheridan. So they put it up to Kerry, but look, Kerry pulled out the stops when they had to. And, you know, they produced a great performance. And, you know, Kerry went into the game without, I suppose, five marquee players, in a sense. Like, you know, they were without Lorraine Scanlon, Aisling O'Connell, Niamh Conacour, Hanno Donoghue, and Eilish Lynch. Like, and they're all starters, you know, and all stars and all star nominees. And, you know, Kerry didn't have to call upon them in the game. And, you know, that's a good sign. And, you know, the people that came in, and particularly the fringe players, you know, they stood up and they put their hands up. And, you know, it's all good going forward, you know, to have that kind of competition in the squad, Ivan.
I suppose, look, when that group came out, Dan, I think that Dublin game was going to be the massive test to come out in the group and get the top spot as well for your home quarter final, not dismissing Cavan, but I suppose going back to that win over Dublin really was what set them up for this quarter final now against Mead.
The win over Dublin was the big one. Like, I mean, you know, there was no doubt that Cavan weren't going to beat Kerry. There was no doubt. And I mean, Dublin gave them a bit of a hammering as well. Like, you know, so I mean, the big game was the Dublin game, and Kerry pulled it out that day in a fairly, you know, fairly rough game in a sense. Like, you know, no, but like the Kerry men yesterday, or Saturday, I should say, against Tyrone, like they stood up. You know, they stood up to the physicality of Dublin that day, and they gave every bit as good as they got, if not more. And that was what really gained them the home quarter final. And of course, All Ireland champions Mead now in Saturday week now, so that's an absolutely massive game for this Kerry team.
Absolutely. And look, I suppose Saturday evening 7:30, presumably Ostack Park, and others talk about hurling matches and everything else, but you know, it's a great occasion for maybe to get out on the Saturday evening before people head for Croker on the Sunday as well.
Absolutely. And like you say, it's not confirmed yet, like, so we'll have to wait and see what the story there with the hurling and everything, but it is a great occasion. Look, there was great support there on Saturday, and there was a huge amount of kids, which is phenomenal, and they were all out in the pitch after, and getting autographs. And I think most of them at the start ran to Louise and Mary Hertick, so she was feeling the kind of the David Clifford effect there for a while, like, you know. But you know, yeah, it's great. Like, and hopefully, like, look, I was talking to Darragh Long on Saturday evening, and he was saying, like, look, hopefully the public will come out, like, and we were hoping that there'd be different days as well, like, between the two games, and they are. And hopefully the public will come in, because this is going to be an absolutely massive game. I mean, this is going to be the real making of this Kerry team. You know, they beat them in the league, they beat Mead in the league, and they beat Mead in the league comprehensively. But I was looking at the two teams there before I came on, like, and you know, the team that Meath had yesterday, they had six changes from that team that Kerry beat in the league. But the two most significant changes were Vicky Wall was back, mm-hmm. Centre-half forward, and Emma Duggan was back, wing-half forward, kind of stroke midfield. Two huge players, Ivan. Two mm-hmm. huge players. They changed the dynamic of this Meath team. So it's going to be an absolute battle for the ages, like, you know. And hopefully the crowd will get behind them. Look, the game in Dublin isn't until 4 o'clock the next day, like, you know. So, I mean, people could catch the game in either Aston Stack Park or wherever it'll be, and then travel to Dublin the next day, you know, to catch them in, like, and, you know, to make a great weekend of football.
Absolutely, definitely whet the appetite for your trip to Croker. I suppose there's one final thing, Dan. I know you're watching the clock this evening on us. I just want to mention, looking at the report there you've written as well, 11 different scores for Kerry yesterday. You mentioned the fringe players coming in and stepping up. That's a fantastic spread of scores, no matter what game of football you're playing in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, every one of the six starting forwards scored. The two midfielders scored. Ciara Murphy came up from cornerback and got a goal. She's getting into a lovely habit of getting vital goals there. And, you know, at the end of good passing, well, she's one of the most improved footballers on this Kerry team. Phenomenal. I mean, you had subs coming on, like Rachel Dwyer got 3 points after coming on. Erica McLean got a point. So, like, I mean, that's all very, very positive. Like, you know, mm-hmm. these players coming on and they're stepping up. Like, young Amy Harrington, you know, played at midfield there yesterday. She's 19 years of age. And she didn't look out of place at all at midfield. You know, she put in a very, very good shift there. And then, of course, you had the likes of the usual Daniel O'Leary there, you know, outstanding at centre-forward with 4 points. And, you know, a special mention around the half-back to Cort Lynch. I mentioned her a good few times on Saturday. Outstanding football, you know, at this stage of her career. She's getting better. She's like a fine wine, like, you know. So, and Sheaf Rocher there up corner-forward with 1-2. So, look, there's a great spread of scorers. Any of them can score. The one thing about this Kerry team is they're a very, very skillful team. They have it. They have the skill, but they also have the desire and the work rate, like, and that bit of steel. And, you know, hopefully now the big game is Meath. This is their All Ireland final, in a sense. Again, you know, if they can get over, if they can knock the All Ireland champions out of the championship, then God only knows what could happen. You're into an All Ireland semi final, and you're looking for Croker then again, Ivan.
Mm-hmm. A massive statement that would be. Look, Dan, we leave you off to your business. You've been busy enough for us all weekend. Thanks very much for taking the time out this evening to chat to us as well.
Thanks, Ivan. Thanks a million.
Brilliant stuff, Dan Carney. There, of course, was on commentary duty. I suppose, Liam, look, you're on the car up on Saturday, so I wouldn't expect you to watch it kick for kick. But look, another fantastic win for the Kerry ladies, and Declan and Dara just doing a fantastic job with them as well.
It was, and the one thing I see with the ladies this year, and I was at a couple of the games last year with the radio, is the physicality of them. No, when I saw the Ireland final last year, I thought Meath kind of were, you could see Meath were a couple of years ahead of them. But this year, with the games I saw with the Kerry ladies, I know they kind of got a bit of a rocking in the Munster final, all right. But I think, look, kicking the arse every so often in bed either, and I think they're after regrouping now again. And this is a nice draw for them, you know, at home against the All-Ireland champions. Like Dan said there, if they can pick this off, it's going to give them a massive boost heading into an All-Ireland semi-final. Now, it's going to be a huge game, and I do hope that the Kerry crowd will come out and support them, because they deserve it. Mm. They're great ambassadors. Like, you have a full forward line there with Leicester, as good as any Kerry men's team. They kick 1-9 between them, you know, so there's a lot of good footballers there, and it's a lovely, like Denise said earlier, he loves watching the football, you know, and it's free flowing football, and it's very, very enjoyable watch. And I do think that if they get over Meath, they're going to take a lot of stopping.
John, I suppose similar to the men's, like, you know, when Kerry drew Tyrone, there's probably that small bit of nervousness around it after the group stage, and like Liam mentioned, maybe the Munster final not going the way and coming out of the group now and getting, you know, All Ireland champions meet. It's the game, you know, that everyone wants to watch, maybe a small bit nerve wracking looking at a game like that, but it's the game now to test yourself, isn't it, at the quarter final?
There's no doubt. And do you know the Cork game, like Liam said there, do you know they went through the league, won the league, you know, and set down a marker, and a reality check then, you know, with Cork. They're a great side. There's a lot of work on him with the lads, and like Liam said, you know, the skill levels and the football they have, you know, I've seen a few of the games, particularly the game against Dublin here in Aston Stack Park, you know, they blew him out of it. But the quality and the kick passing and the scoring that they have, and I think the fitness levels they've built up, you know, certainly they're up there now. This is a real test, because, you know, like Dan said there, Meath have a few of the stalwarts back. They're all Ireland champions. Champions are hard to beat, but the fact that we're at home, I think, is crucial. And I think, as well as that, get over that, it looks as if we've avoided Cork or Dublin for the semi-final, and that's crucial as well. But you know, fantastic, and they deserve the support, in fairness, and glad that they're not clashing the Kerry Derry game, and hopefully the Kerry crowd will come out to support them because they deserve it. Massive effort being put in.
Absolutely. Plenty of calls coming in. Keane's a busy man next door. What are the panel's thoughts on Clifford's Wonder Pass? Was it a one in a million occurrence? Yeah, I think Twitter all day yesterday flicking through the goal kept coming up, and just that the touch of the ball and the kick over the head, it was just something that's, I don't know, it was a bit of skill I've never seen before, John.
Exceptional players do that, Ivan, and he's an exceptional player. You know, his people were saying, did he see Tony Brosnan? He did. His vision, he has it. You know, the exceptional players have that, and he knew if he handled that ball and held it, he was buried. So like one touch, but yeah, the execution of the pass, 'tis fine to touch it, but where's it going to go? But it was just in his stride, Tony got it, and the finish then, it was important, it was finished because of that kick. And you know, I think both goals by Dermot O'Connor and Shawnee Shea, the composure they showed, sidestep, keep, you know, no pressure, and just, you know, they didn't burst in it, but they found their spot, and you know, exceptional David Clifford, exceptional.
Absolutely, Liam, he had your seat. I saw the video of you in commentary, did, were ready to jump on top of Tim. It was just a fantastic move, and that Shawnee Shea again, just the composure inside the box when there's fellas coming at you, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, because I suppose the one thing I was kind of worried about, and you probably saw in the video, my mouth was kind of open. I thought he was going to be driven up the rosette, you know, and that's what it was. Look, and David knew that himself, because he never caught the ball. He actually pushed the ball, if you watch it, he pushed the ball down to his leg quick, and everything was done so quick, and people were kind of saying, how did he see it? I think he felt them. You know, I think, like John said, exceptional players, the likes of the Messies and all these guys, you know, you could see the passes they give in soccer matches, they're just unbelievable. But David knew what was happening. I think he felt, and he could hear him coming at him, and he just did that bit of magic. But like, which was the main part, it had to be finished. And, you know, because I know we'd be talking about the great pass, but if it hadn't hit the back of the net, we'd be kind of saying, look, what if? But then when he hit the back of the net, it just made it that bit better. But it was, I suppose it was something like everyone kind of gasped. You know, when he did it, everyone was kind of saying, wow. And next thing, he was in the back of the net, because everyone realised this is magic, like, yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Season contender.
Yeah, well, yeah, just well worth going to see that alone, yeah.
Absolutely. Dinny, caller in, what would the outcome have been for Kerry if they had been playing Mayo?
I think it would be probably pretty similar, you know. Mayo had a great league, they won the league, played good football in the league, beat their nearest rivals. Galway would be like Cochrane Kerry. To beat your rivals is a bit more difficult because they're up for it. It takes on a new lease of life. But came down to Killarney, had a marvellous win. You know, Kerry people even leaving Killarney were saying, oh, problems here, where, you know, are we in trouble? Kerry looked as if they were in trouble at that stage. I have no idea what they were doing in terms of a block of training or whatever. But then Mayo's next day out was against Loud, and you know, they got over the line by a point. And then, you know, to play Cork, whereas Cork have improved a bit, they hadn't improved that much. Mayo were contenders, and they had, you know, a big chance to play at home in a quarterfinal, avoid an extra game, and they failed, you know, pretty miserably. And the last day they were quite flat, and Dublin, once they started getting at them, they really didn't have any comeback. But I thought surprising on the Mayo line that they took off Aidan O'Shea. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be you know, they'd be criticising him, but in fairness to him, I thought he was having a good game, and he was the only outlet, if you like, to win ball. And they surprisingly, know whether it was the GPS took him off or whether it was the guys with their vision, I'm not sure, but I would have refused the information that they got from the GPS, and I'd have used my own discretion and said whatever. You know, they had no chance even at that stage, but I thought it was a bit unfair to take him off.
Do you think same outcome, John McCary beating Mayo?
Yeah, I think they would, and the way Kerry are going, Ivan, I think they would, you know. And it's maybe the game, it's been, a lot has been said about the break. and you're going in as provincial champions, you're avoiding that game.
Yeah.
The intensity now, and I think the work rate and the physicality of the Mayo and Galway game, I think it certainly took a lot out of them. They started well, but I thought O'Hara, the cornerback, he was lost.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great defender. He was lost, and Basquell went to town on him. And you know, you can't afford to give away, especially the goal. He was badly cut for the goal. I agree with Dini. He had no share. I don't know why he was taken off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was, apart from Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy, he was one of their best forwards. You know, and he was winning ball. But certainly, look on the display at the weekend and what we saw, I think Kerry would have beaten Mayo. They'd have beaten most teams that were in front of them, I think, at the way they played the weekend.
True, not ask you the same question, Liam.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake Mayo made was letting Cork beat him. You know, it put him down a very hard avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And if, like that, you know, between three hard games and in a short period of time, and you're looking at injuries, even though they didn't have that many injuries. But yeah, I think that if they got over that Cork game and probably went in as group winners, it would have an easier path for them. But yeah, something badly went wrong there anyway, because the way they were going through the league and the way they played us in Killarney, it went after that then, whatever happened. But look, I agree with Dini. I wouldn't have taken off Aidan O'Shea. He was the out ball. He was the man that you could kick in one or two high balls in. The couple of balls that were kicked into him, he won them and he passed
them,
it.
Yeah.
And he won and passed it. So I don't know, is sometimes this mythical thing can come in that, oh yeah, we take him off and it's all his fault. You know, he's kind of the pantomime villain at times. You know, so I was very surprised, because they were rudderless when he went off.
But you'd also ask, Ivan, like, when you win the preliminary quarter final, you should have 2 weeks of the quarter final.
Yeah.
I think, regardless of the time scale, fit it into it, because, you know, at the level we're at, you know, I think you need that 2 weeks.
And I would go a step further, that replay. That, and the penalties,
yeah,
like that should be going to a replay.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
Our man Monaghan should be going to replay
after extra time.
It should be going to replay, because penalties are very hard. Look, I know we enjoy watching it in soccer and it's all this, but no, I think another day out for these lads. They're, even though we say they're professionals, they're still amateur footballers. You know, it's not a nice way to go.
They could play that in Clonus next weekend.
They could have very
easily. It wouldn't affect any
calendar. And I think both teams would have agreed.
We'll chat a bit more about the other quarterfinals after the break. Just one more for you lads, incident I didn't see. What are the panel's thoughts on the linesman not intervening following Darren McCurry hitting Graham O'Sullivan into the stomach? I mean, look, these calls can come in comments and stuff about performances, but I mean, in the pace of the game now, like even in a game on Saturday, it was very pacey. It was not many it wasn't stop start, it was quick. Yeah. Bit of forgiveness to referees in a tough physical game like that.
Yeah, there'll always be incidents like that. You know, there was, you know, it was McCurry is not a dirty player either. In fairness,
absolutely,
you know,
not, no.
he's one of their best ball players. You know, he just let out. You know, I don't think you can be nitpicking about all those.
Mm.
But look, overall, I think that in fairness, the referees, you know, they did quite well over the weekend.
I thought Brendan Crowley did very well for us, because he left the game go.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Because when we usually play against Tyrone, they're falling down, the physio's coming in and everything. The minute there was a free, he was running away, the ball was moved.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't slowing down the game or anything. Everything was fast paced. And it did actually suit us, because the last thing we wanted to know was a stop start kind of a game, because it wouldn't have suited us. So I thought he did very well the weekend.
I'm sure if he had taken the rule book out, there could have been 20, 25 euro cards in game.
Yeah,
like
could have. Yeah, he used a bit of common sense as well.
Common sense, exactly. Yeah. Look, that we're tight on time with the break, so we'll take a break. We'll chat about the other three quarterfinals after we take these.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Okay, welcome back to Terrace Talk. It's Ivan in for Donald for the rest of the evening. 083 300 3300. You can give Keane a call. 066 712 3666. I suppose that we've mentioned a lot, lads, about the other quarterfinals already. We'll just, I suppose, Dublin Mayo to start. We get through these fairly long because time is against us. I suppose Dublin, the much the stronger. A caller says, what does the panel make of Mayo's goal being disallowed in the first half? If the goal had been allowed, could it have swung the game in Mayo's favour? Liam Brosnan.
Well, it's only small things that can swing games like that. You know, confidence but I do think that you can pick the ball up like that. You know, that is the rule. So I think the referee was right.
The rule. Were Mayo somewhat disappointing, John Kennedy? Do you think they'd bring a bit more fight to it?
Yeah, they were disappointing. You know that the goal that had it begin, but the Dublin goal, I think, was the one. You know, they started well, but the second half Dublin just took off. It, you know, it's hard to put a finger on what happened, Mayo. They seem to have the energy levels, they seem to be up for it. few little things went against them, but I think the power of Dublin, their bench, you know, their marquee players again, you know, the Fintons, looking, the Howards, and the Jack McCaffrey's coming on, you know, Paul Mannion. I mean, you could be reeling these guys off. Lee Gannon is certainly playing very well behind. You know, their pace. Similar to Kerry, Basquell was the man, I think, 2-2. Yeah. You know, their pace, their kick passing, but their acceleration, like, a lot of similarities with Kerry. And, you know, there was only one team in it, really. You know, they were pulling away. And it showed then, you know, bringing on Dean Rock, he wanted to score his first kick. You know, it was like all times. Mm-hmm. Certainly, they're a well-oiled machine. They've come through kind of under the radar, and they're in the semi-final.
Yeah, doors of tomorrow, I think, under the radar is definitely what we're talking about. Dublin, Dinny Cork, I suppose, look, had a very good year in fairness up till the quarter final. I think maybe it's a bit just disappointing in going down to Derry the way they did.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, scoring, what was it, 1-8, you know, 1-8 wouldn't win you much at that level in a quarter final of an All-Ireland series. Overall, there was a bit of progress made. You know, there'd be two Division One teams after losing to Clare. We lost a lot of hope. We thought, you know, will we even be in? The Sam Maguire went up to Louth, got a good result in Navan. Beating Mayo was a big plus. Then had a good win over Roscommon. Progress made, but still a lot of work to do. Fair play to the lads involved. If they can, you know, find a few forwards. We need to find forwards. We just, you know, we had a good few chances against Derry. Didn't take them. There was, you know, probably four or five chances. Had we taken them, you'd put pressure on Derry. They'd have to come out a bit more. Or, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, coming out a bit more, but that... then maybe you could, you know, attack him a bit more and get a few more scores. But a bit of progress made, but, you know, we're still a long way off. I suppose John Cleary put his finger on today when he said, you know, Division 1 has to be the target. You know, if we could get to Division 1 and, you know, maybe win a round or two of the Championship next year again, that would be progress. But it's not going to be easy, because hurling is, as we know, and it's not an excuse, hurling is big in Cork, and Cork haven't won a hurling for a long time, and they're really, you know, and any fella that is good at the hurling and good at the football, he's going to opt for, you know, young Hayes there was lost, the Cahalans were lost. Mm-hmm. They're all huge players that could have been, make the difference the last day against Derry and make a difference going forward. But, you know, you say, hats off to them, they're going hurling, and that's their choice.
It was the goal, Dinny, after Cork getting the goal.
Well, yeah, that was the turning point, really. You know,
54 seconds.
Yeah. They got the goal, but they conceded quite soft.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing they wanted at that time was to hold out and not give away a goal.
And maybe get the next score again and just push on.
So that didn't happen. No, overall, Derry were, you know, were 4 or 5 points better. But, as I say, there's a pile of work to be done, but fairly choose to the lads that, you know, if they can, they'll go back to their clubs now and play Championship, and, you know, they'll have to go back at it again next October, November. It is hard going when you're down there, but trying to get out of Division 2 should be the goal for next year.
I suppose it's fair of me to say that Cork are kind of a team in transition over the last couple of years, kind of bringing this fresh blood and you know, out with the old, in with the new, the kind of Kerry Cork rivalry we had, but, you know, going back the last 10 or 15 years, it's kind of maybe dwindled away a small bit while this transition period's happening. I suppose is an All-Ireland quarter-final kind of as much as you could expect from a Cork team at the moment?
Well, certainly after the Clare game, you know, that's not taking from Clare, like, but, you know, we'd always say that, you know, we'd be hoping that we'd always have a pint or two to spare over Clare and Tipperary and Limerick, and that's no disrespect to them. But, you know, we were beaten by Clare fair and square, and it looked as if, you know, we weren't going to progress at all. But in fairness, by beating the teams that we beat, as I say, there's a lot of work to be done, but it's a question of knuckling down to it and trying to find a few new players in the Championship, and hopefully that we'll get back to the stage where we will be more competitive. There's no easy fix in it, because the Kerrys, Dublin, Mayos, you know, they're all well ahead of Cork, but it's up to the players as much as it's up to the sideline. Are they committed to give it 4 or 5 years of their time? It's a big commitment, but that's what you have to do now if you want to compete with the Dublins and the Kerrys and the Mayos and the Tyrones.
Mm-hmm. Liam, did Derry show you anything in that game? I don't want to take Donald's preview show off him for next week, but a quick word on Derry after the draw and everything was made. We know the fixture and all that. Was there anything from Derry's game against Cork you might say Kerry need to watch out for?
Well, definitely. I've made his look. They're Ulster champions. Mm-hmm. 2 years in a row, aren't they? Like they are going to be tough. They're around with a while. A lot of good players there. Like they're talking up that this Chrissy is McCaig. This the is going to mark David Clifford. There's going to be David will never. They're saying that David hasn't met a player like him yet, and but I don't think this fella has met a player like David Clifford yet. But yeah, McCluskey, McKinless, you know, Conor Glass, all these guys, very good footballers. You know, so yeah, they will. But like they play an ordering type of game. And I think we can handle that now at the moment. That the way we're playing, we can handle that. Once we can move the ball, our defensive structure seems to be back in place again. But the key is moving the ball out at speed. Now, what they do is something similar to Tyrone. They try to lull you into a false sense of security. They'll try to bring the Kerry defenders down the field and then break at speed and goals. But we kind of stopped that last day against Tyrone because we always held one or two fellas back just in case there was a break. There was and plus when we lost the ball, we were stopping the ball straight. There was a bit of cuteness in us. We were stopping the ball straight away. So yeah, I think look, it's going to be a right. It is going to be a battle. But I'm like I said at the start of the year when I was talking about Kerry, I wasn't as confident, you know, through the league because I could never see us, you know, making the same moves that we were doing last year. But last year I was very confident going into games. But I'm confident now again after the last two games that, you know, we have something that's starting to green shoots starting to appear and it's just coming right. And I do think that we'll like I said, it's going to be tough, but I think we'll get over there. All right.
And stuff and Armagh, Monaghan, John, I suppose, look, we kind of mentioned a little earlier on penalties, no way to decide a game, but for the neutral, it is great. Like, I must say, I enjoyed it. I went home, I sat down, put on my GA go and watched the second half and the extra time and the penalties. It's like, it's fascinating for a neutral, but for Monaghan or Armagh, you'd feel sorry for the outcome of it.
Yeah, it's a killer, like, you know, and Vinnie Corey kind of said it. I was watching last night in the interview, you know. They didn't win the game, they won the penalty shootout, you know, and in fairness, he was very gracious in victory. But you know, there's a question about Armagh, Ivan. We saw him here in the National League, I said it in Terrace Talk after. They didn't go to win the game. Did they go to win the game the weekend?
No.
I don't think they did. I think they have some fabulous footballers playing within themselves, waiting for things to happen, you know, not losing. But are they going to win either?
They're all systems, aren't they?
They are systems. And then you look at Monaghan, look, Jack McCarron, and what can you say about Conor McManus? Do you know, he came on, he kicked 3 points, he stuck 2 penalties. They were an example to anyone for how to take a penalty. You know, roof of the net, left and right. And, you know, what a county Monaghan are, though. You know, they're in the All-Ireland Minor Final.
65,000
small county
people.
They are in the semi-final. They survive in Division 1
with the last 5 or 6 years,
you know, and in fairness, like, you know, they can. Vinnie Corey, real passionate, you know, a real sound Monaghan man, great GA man, and you know, fair play to them. They're in the All-Ireland semi-final and they'll have a cut at Dublin, you know. Obviously they'll be underdogs, but look, they got over the line in a penalty shootout. Is it the way you'd like to see it? Not really. I feel that, you know, if it's extra time and his level after extra time, I think at that stage of the championship there should be a replay. They should be going up to Clonus next Saturday evening.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're into injury time. 2.5 minutes. We're going to do a quick fire on a few comments across the table. Dinny, I'm going to go to you first. Where was it? With David Goff teaching in Dublin, should he be allowed to referee a game that includes Dublin? That's from John and Dingle.
No, definitely not.
As quick fire as you could ask for now, Dinny. Fair as that. Quick. For that. Took me longer to ask the question.
We go through a lot of questions here.
Hi, Ivan, lads. I think Kerry will get over Derry okay, but wouldn't be putting any money on Dublin to beat Monaghan.
No, Dublin beat Monaghan, Aris.
Okay, Liam disagrees with you. Congratulations to Tim and Ambrose for another round of outstanding commentary. John, would you agree?
Oh, I'd agree, yeah. They're the comments around the county for the last 2 days is incredible. You know, they're legends.
They're royalty, you know, at this stage.
And it's more than the commentary, you know, they bring a sense of humour to it as well. And fair play to them. Well done.
Absolutely. Text in, I suppose, look, maybe we did gloss over it a bit. Maybe someone doesn't agree with the previous statement about the pace impacting McCurry's hit not being picked up. Okay, I suppose maybe I possibly phrased that wrong myself, in the fact that the game has kind of gone so quick now that things are moving on. As you say, the game was kind of left play. I don't want to, you know, look at an incident and say, you know, it shouldn't have been pulled up, and I can apologise for that. But, you know, it's just kind of saying that what I was saying was that the game has gone so fast now that it's easy for a referee to miss something. Was I right?
I think so, Evan. I don't think, you know, that you can stop the game for, you know, there's always a bit, you know, the GA is a funny organisation in that sense, that fellas are giving out, pulling a twist and just to rile fellas up and, you know, cause a bit of thing and good for your team and all that kind of thing. So if you stopped it for all those incidents, you know, sometimes there's a bit of a push and a bit of a show. And I'd say, in fairness to the referees now, they're beginning to let the play go a bit, but at the same time, you must call fouls. When a foul is a foul, it's a foul, and it should be a foul. Now, going back to the incident about the Mayo forward picking the ball up, the Dublin backs had already stopped, but probably another referee might have left it go. But once the Dublin players, he saw they stopped up when they heard the whistle. So I'd say a 14-yard free, but it should have been in and not out, because the Mayo fella, I don't think, touched the ball. He said first, and he touched the ball on the ground. So I don't think he did.
No, well, one man we forgot to mention this evening, Paddy Talley. I think a lot of people praise him for the performance. Lads, thanks very much for joining us this evening, and we'll be back again probably next week to look ahead to Derry, and the following week looking back on Derry. We'll take a break for news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay, welcome back to the second hour of Terrace Talk. It's Ivan Hurley in for Donal Barry. This evening we gave Donal a well-earned week off, as we mentioned earlier on. I think we might send Donal away, because if Kerry footballers, women and men, get results like that when he's gone, we might go on and win the All-Ireland in a few weeks' time. Ivan, we always hear praise for forwards, men and women, but don't forget backs that do Trojan work. Well played by Kieran Murphy on Saturday. A defender came up and scored a goal. Yeah, definitely. We often talk about forwards and how they're scoring and everything else. And the forward side of the pitch, but the defenders and what they're able to do in Kerry is fantastic as well. Hi lads, great synopsis of Kerry game as usual, fair play. However, it would be a little remiss, it was all not to mention Paddy Talley's contribution to the situation. Jack was very clever when he was drawing up his backroom team for the stint of his tenure. So yeah, dead right, Paddy Talley doing fantastic work. We mentioned it there at the very, very end. And must say hello to Donny Jack, who was chilling by the pool in Benidorm listening to Terrace Talk stadium. Would you like to be by the pool in Benidorm tonight, Sean Moriarty?
No, I've enough going on in my life. I'm bringing trips to Spain. We'll take a holiday after this, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Sean Moriarty, of course, one of the voices of motorsport here in the county, is passing kind of the microphone over to me for an event shortly. He's going to become the clerk of the course. We all know how big of a job that is when it comes to motorsport events in the county. But this one, a small bit different. It's the Brian O'Neill's Garden Equipment and Trailers Ballyfinan Festival of Speed, taking place in Ballyfinan, just outside us here in Tralee, in now under 2 weeks' time. What can we expect? I'm going to ask Sean Moriarty that question.
Well, I suppose hill climb racing. When was the last time that we had hill climb racing in County Kerry? I'd say you'd have to go back to the mid-1980s. Kerry Motor Club ran an event up the Castlemaine Mountain. We have ran events in County Limerick with joint ventures with Limerick Motor Club, but this is the first hill climb in Kerry in nearly 40 years. What is a hill climb? It's a speed event. It's a approximately 1.5 to 2 kilometres of a short, twisty course, fastest time in the day. Very unlike rallying, there's no co-driver, there's no pace notes being called, it's against the clock. You'd expect each driver would get 4 to 5 runs at the day, and the fastest time of any given run is what declares the result, not accumulative times like you would have in a stage rally. Why are we doing it? It's a historic occasion in the county. It's almost the exact day of 120 years of closed road motorsport in the county, jointly promoted by the Kerry Motor Club and the Ballyfinan Community Hall Association. It's an event that the locals have really bought into. They're really looking forward to just bringing a little something different, a little bit of excitement to the village, and credit to the people of the village and the surrounding neighbourhoods have been a fantastic part of the organising team since we started in earnest around mid-May.
Mm-hmm. We're joined by Mike Marshall on the line now as well. He, of course, one of the founding members of Clarny Industry Motor Club over in Clarny, of course, but well into his motorsport and his history. Mike, look, you're very welcome along and to chat about this Ballyfinan Festival of Speed. It's quite a historic occasion we're remembering as well.
Yeah, it's a very historic occasion because it's remembering the 120th anniversary of the first motorsport event in Kerry. Now, there was a fine celebration in 2003 representing 100 years of motorsport in Kerry, but this one has been well organised and should be a very exciting day.
How important was Ballyfinan 120 years ago to what we know now in Kerry for Circuit of Kerry's and Rally of the Lakes and everything else, for paving the way for roads to be closed off in the county to watch motorsport?
Well, it was very important because I suppose the reason why it was in Ireland at all was that at the time motoring was in its infancy, and when it was decided that the Automobile Club of Great Britain and Ireland should run the Gordon Bennett race, because it's a British driver had won the race the previous year, so it fell to the British and Irish Association to run the race. But there was huge resentment towards cars in England at the time. There was a powerful railway lobby, there was a powerful canal lobby, and a very powerful horse-drawn lobby, and they didn't want to see motorsport or motoring of any sort or getting off the ground at all. I mean, that might sound far-fetched, but there was at one stage a meeting of Jarvie associations in Killarney, and a resolution was passed that no car should ever be allowed within the confines of Killarney town. So the resentment and animosity towards cars was quite universal at the time. And in actual fact, it would never have got off the ground were it not for the efforts of an Englishman, John Scott Montague, Member of Parliament, who devised the Light Locomotives 1903 Act and steered the through Parliament with the help of every Irish MP about the Unionist and Nationalist tradition.
And a very famous man won that race in Ballyfinan, Mike, as well, didn't he?
Yeah, the race was won by the Honourable Charles Rowles, a native of Monmouthshire, in a Mars car. But about 4 years afterwards, he became a partner in the Rolls-Royce company. And the silver trophy, which Kerry County Council had commissioned and which cost 30 guineas, an enormous sum of money at the time, was won by Charles Rolls, but it was never returned to Ireland because Charles Rolls was killed sometime afterwards in a flying accident. And I have a lot of contacts in the Monmouthshire area, and I made huge efforts to see if that trophy could be tracked down, but unfortunately nobody was able to help.
That really was a monumental time though for motorsport in the county, Mike, wasn't it? I mean, you know, as Sean says there, like, you know, it did pave the way for, you know, for further motorsport, as you say, possibly motoring in around the towns as well, but like, you know, for motorsport as well in particular, it definitely paved the way to what we're used to seeing now in 2023 as well.
Yeah, it is. You see, the thing is that act, which was allowed roads to be closed and speed limits to be suspended, that applied only to Ireland. And it meant that the motorsport flourished in Ireland because it was always said that once the second car rolled off the production line, competition started. The people who owned these cars wanted to know who was quicker, who had a better car, and who could cover distance in a faster time. So motorsport had its origins very, very early. But only in Ireland could it be developed to any extent. Because in the UK, the 12 miles per hour speed limit still existed. And no parliament was going to pass any rule that would remove that speed limit because the opposition was huge.
So Ireland paved a huge part for motorsport. Sean, you want to jump in on that one?
There's a couple of two angles there on Mike's story, just the bring it right up to modern times. Mike spoke with the politicians in Westminster that signed this Act of Parliament, and one of them happened to be a West Cork man. Obviously, Ireland was under British rule at the time, but the West Cork MP for representing Cork was actually a man called Tim Healy, which is where the name the Tim Healy Pass comes from now, probably one of the most famous rally stages in the country at the moment. Also, there's another fascinating story came to light during the week. As we organise this event, more and more information is coming out from the woodwork, and there's a story goes that when Charles Rowles left Cork City for after the Carrigrohane Strait speed trial, he drove to Killarney via Bantry, Glengariff, the Caha Pass, the Caha Tunnels, and down Mall's Gap. And somewhere coming down Mall's Gap, of course, well known modern day rally stage at the moment, coming down Mall's Gap, he broke the front left leaf spring in his Mars car and arrived in Killarney with a damaged suspension, and met a few Jarvies out around the Murkris area, who advised him to take it to O'Shea's Forge at the top of High Street. And Timmy O'Shea, I think his name was, or is it Jimmy O'Shea, repaired the car in time for the competition a few days later. But Rowles was so impressed with his engineering ingenuity that he actually offered him a job, and as one local historian told me this week, he joked this week that it could very easily become the Rowles O'Shea Motor Car Company. But the very interesting fact in that is that those O'Shea's are their direct descendants are still involved in motorsport to this day. They would include Duggins, Rob, Tara, and Andrew, and a slightly different side of the family would be a grandson would be Mick Smith, who is the current chairman of the London Irish Motor Club. And in an amazing twist of fate, Mick Smith's grandson is now serving his apprenticeship with Rolls-Royce Aerospace in England.
So it all comes back to its origins. Look, we're going to have to take a quick break. Did I say we'll be hopefully joined after the break by one of the top seeds for the event in 2 weeks' time? We'll might chat to Ben O'Brien after his quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Best luck to Sean Moriarty and all in Ballyfinan. That's from Anne-Marie. So we've got someone wish you all the best, Sean. I'd like to say we're joined by a Limerick man now on the line as well. I'm not sure, is it his first time competing in Kerry? He'll tell me that. This is Ben O'Brien. We're kind of used to a lot of rally names coming on in motorsport circles in Kerry and coming on to Radio Kerry to chat to us. But it's great to see someone who's driving a Formula 3 car coming on to chat to us. Ben, you're welcome on to Terrace Talk. How are you?
How are you? Are you well?
Good, Ben, good.
You are correct in saying that it is actually my first time competing in a hill climb in County Kerry. I would be secretary of the Hill Climb and Sprint Commission, so we look after the kind of current, say, national championship or whatever, so Sean and the team would have contacted us to come down and initially have a look at Ballyfinan. I suppose from the second resort, we saw huge potential and saw the historical importance of it all, and thankfully I've learned an awful lot more about it since, so can't wait to have a crack off it.
Not being entirely rude to the sport of hill climb, but here in Kerry, I think people, when you think of motorsport, you think of A, rallying, or B, maybe Formula 1 from the telly. Is this a small bit of a marriage of the two, is what I make it out to be?
A little bit, yeah. I suppose, look, in terms of currently what are competing on hills or sprints, would be a mix everywhere from ex-formula racing cars that have been adapted to suit our particular discipline, to rally cars, to saloons that would be kind of, I suppose, reasonably close to a rally car, but they have a lot of weight shaved off them and strength shaved off them, just to get it's free speed. The lighter they are, the quicker they'll go, and they don't have the same kind of need the same endurance that a rally car would need. Right back to small hatchbacks, sports cars. So there's a very wide array of stuff. Generally, what's winning are the kind of sports car type, the likes of Radicals and stuff like that, or your Formula single seaters, which is kind of where I found myself in recent years.
Sean showed me a photograph of your car a little later on. It's something, if I can give the listeners a description, something you might see Max Verstappen sitting into. Would I be correct in saying maybe a small bit less power, but something along those lines?
I think, yeah. I don't think I'd see which way Max Verstappen went now, but it does. Yeah, it looks, it's something similar. So basically, what I'm using this year is it's a Gould GR37. So it's basically it's a hill climb special built by an English engineering firm about 25 years ago. So they used a Formula 3 tub at the time, and but then they what they went and did was a carbon fibre tub and carbon fibre monocoque, and then they used an ex-Leighton House Formula 1 engine, so it's a Judge V8 with 620 horsepower, and they bolted that to the back of the tub and they put really high downforce hill climb wings on it. Now at the time they would have outdragged the current F1 car, however once you get to 130 or 40 miles an hour the F1 car takes off, but this would have been, you know, it's a very purpose-built one-trick pony, basically. It's designed to go from A to B very quickly, as long as A to B aren't any more than 3 or 4 kilometres apart, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what it can do. It does that fairly well, but it's, you know, it will be a very compromised racing car. But it's just, as I say, this is the only discipline that I compete in and have done for the last 10 or 12 years. So, look, as I say, it's very purpose-built for what we're doing. And I suppose the cars that have come afterwards are no real advantage, given that Irish hills are essentially tarmac rally stages. They're not necessarily, you look at hill climbing in the UK or what have you, they're, you know, they're like snooker table finish and they're really smooth. Our hills are not. Our hills are very close to, a very short tarmac rally stage, and we need a car with compliance and a bit of ground clearance and stuff like that to be able to do that. But yeah, as I say, we're really looking forward now to getting down to Ballyfinan and again and having another go at it, you know.
What can the average, you know, maybe casual motorsport attendee in the county, who again, who might stand out in the status for the Cup of the Rallies every year in Kerry, what could they expect maybe different from, you know, Sean's event here in the Ballyfinan Festival of Speed? What can people expect from watching hill climb all day to go out and watching a stage rally?
Yeah, I suppose the big thing is the wide array of a vast variety of cars. You're going to see cars all the way from mine back down to, we have a Cinquecento class, where there's a kind of it's a control spec, where all the cars are the same and it's designed to get people into the motorsport. So you're going to see everything in between. You're going to have your Mark II Escorts, your historic cars, sports cars, single seaters, everything in between. Whereas I know, you know, conventionally on your rally, you're probably going to see a lot of the, you know, you see fantastic machinery, but a lot of it is very similar on the hills. They're all completely different. They're genuinely no two cars the same, you know.
Brilliant stuff. Look, Ben, it was a pleasure chatting to you. I'm sure we'll catch up over the weekend in Ballyfinan as well, and we'll have, of course, live coverage of the event here on Radio Kerry right throughout the day. No matter if Kerry are playing an All-Ireland football semi-final, we'll make sure to get our more sports speed in as well. But Ben, look, for this evening, thanks very much for joining us.
Excellent. Thanks very much for having me on.
Cheers. Fantastic. That's Ben O'Brien there, Limerick man. He's doing the sport a bit of justice there, Sean. Give it a great account of the what's coming up.
In fairness to Ben, like, he's a national competitor. He's just back from France where he won a Masters event. He was the first Irish man to win that event in France. So I suppose to have someone the calibre of Ben O'Brien competing in Ballyfinan is a bit like having someone like Josh Moffat competing in the Rally de Lakes at the Circle of Kerry, top of his game. Ben's car is going to be a huge crowd pleaser. There's a few more interesting ones coming in as well. John Donnelly from Tyrone County, or Omagh County, Tyrone, put in his entry around 5 o'clock last Saturday evening. I wonder why that happened, but he's coming anyway. He's in a pill beam, and he'd be a very popular, very quick exponent of single-seater racing cars in Northern Ireland, making the long trip down. Nearly all the plans are in place now. We've really the event really starts on Saturday evening. We're going to have a kind of a safety scrutineering, a driver's briefing, things like that in Ballyfinan Community Hall. A little bit of display and a showcase of the cars. They will be on static display from early afternoon in the village, and then we come back early Sunday morning. Roads close in the area, and just for, so the general public know, but the roads close kind of approximately 3 to 5 kilometres each direction out of the four roads out of Ballyfinan Crossroads from 8 o'clock on Sunday, July 16th. And the plan is to have 4 to 5 runs all through the day, and the fastest driver in any particular run will win the event. A couple of sideshows going on there as well. The Killarney Valley and Classic Club have come aboard with us, and they are running a Classic car show in a field next to the village. They're expecting about 200 cars. One of our own local motorcycle road racers, Anthony O'Carroll, he is actually competing on the event. He's driving his father's rally car. Anthony has previously won a hill climb, motorcycle hill climb, so he's gone from two wheels to four in that. But he will be arriving in very late Saturday night, direct from the Isle of Man. He'll be making he's contesting the Southern 100 road races on the Isle of Man on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, and makes his way back to Ireland on Saturday into Ballyfinane late Saturday night for the Festival of Speed on Sunday. Lots of other sideshows like that going on around the village as well. And a few more surprises to come if we can get them boxed off within the next 10 days.
Absolutely. If I know Sean Moriarty, it'll always be a surprise last minute or not. Sean, I suppose talk to me a small bit about the community out there in Ballyfinane. I mean, look, areas steeped in motorsport history, a lot maybe newer families coming in since, you know, those early 1900s when that race was taking place 120 years ago. I mean, how good have the community been outside in Ballyfinane for tying into the event?
I think the reality was the very first meeting we had with the community back around January, February this year, and we gave a presentation in the famous Shanty Bar to explain what we hope to do in July. And you're always nervous going into these areas. You don't know what kind of reception, what kind of reaction you're going to get. And when we were finished the presentation, we asked the audience, the members on the floor, to any questions. And I think it was the chairman of the Ballyfinane Community Association, but someone deeply connected with the association, stood up and said, we always wanted to do this, but we don't know how. And it was almost like a meeting of minds immediately that Kerry Moore Club had the knowledge, but the people back there have absolutely bought into the idea. Trojan work by, like, I'm not going to name anybody, because every one of them has done something big or something small to make this thing happen. A title sponsor, Brian O'Neill, is from the village itself. That tells its own story. And I suppose maintaining the history, one of the first entries in for the event was from a young driver called Keith O'Connor, and Keith just lives 100 yards from the crossroads on the way up the original hill climb, and he contested the Junior Rally of the Lakes in May. So we've gone the full circle. We've got the first ever motorsport event in County Kerry, and it's been contested by our current crop of junior drivers, and one of them has been from the village of Ballyfinane. So huge thanks to the people of Ballyfinane for their support over the last 3 or 4 months.
Brilliant stuff, Sean. Look, we're unfortunately counting down the minutes on time, so we'll have to leave it there. But look, very best of luck to everyone involved with Kerry Motor Club and the Ballyfinane community as well in this event. I'm very much looking forward to getting out there myself, even though of course Kerry taking on Derry at 4 o'clock, but I'm sure the screens around the area will have it on as well, so there'll be no fear of missing out on any football action. But thanks to Ben O'Brien and Mike Marshall and Sean Moriarty for filling us in a bit more on that. One comment in before we have to go to a break about Kerry and Derry, the meetings in the championships, we went through it. So in 1970 Derry met Kerry, with Kerry winning comfortably 23 points to 10. In 1976, they also met Kerry Crews to a 5-14 to 1-10 win in that. And then 19 years ago, Kerry had a 1-17 to 1-11 win over Derry in the All-Ireland semi-final on the way to winning that 2004 All-Ireland final. So plenty of excitement. And of course, Donal back from his holidays next week with a full, more than likely 2-hour preview of Kerry against Derry in the All-Ireland semi-final. So make sure you're tuned in for that. But after this quick break, we'll take a look at our final Women in Sport, Kerry Women in Sport feature, of course, finishing up this evening, and it's with Maureen Eline.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee.
Now, you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. It's Ivan Hurley in for Donal Barry until 8 o'clock this evening. Keep your comments coming in, 083 300 3300, or you can call Keane there on 066 7123 666. Time now for the final episode of Kerry Women in Sport, and in tonight's episode, we hear from basketball legend Maureen Eline. When the Brandon native retired in 1992 after scoring 28 points in a league final defeat to Naivura, it brought her average in 8 national finals in as many years to 19 points a game. This is her story.
What did I love about it? As somebody said to me once, there's the smell of that ball. But it was the camaraderie, the fun, the crack. I suppose there was a pride in it.
In this episode of Kerry Women in Sport, we hear the story of Maureen Eline. Maura was number 11 in a list compiled by the Irish Examiner in 2015 of the top Irish female basketballers of all time.
Prior to the 1985 Top 4 National Championship final, every previous national title had been won by Dublin clubs. On St Patrick's Day of that year, Tralee put an end to that with a teenage Neil Lyon scoring 23 points. The next year, they'd win the next national title, the Cup. Again, she scored 23. The following 2 years, she'd win the league each time. She retired in 1992 after scoring 28 points in a league final defeat to Navarra, bringing her average in 8 national finals in as many years to 19 points a game. This is her story.
Morning, Line from Brendan in Kerry. I'm a native Brendan woman, born and bred. Grew up in Brendan and went for my secondary education to Clochteed in Dingle. Many of the day I got a good beating over coming home with my shoes fairly dirty from any ball that was hopping around the yard, I was involved. So whether it was mixed with the lads or the girls playing, but it was always just playground games in the school. We weren't given the privileges that they're given now, where there's teams for this and teams for that, but at the same time, you were encouraged to get out there and run and hide and play ball. But I suppose we were encouraged to get involved in community games. That was always through the school. And even though my parents didn't have any transport at the time, we used to always get there, myself and my siblings. We would hope that somebody would come pick us up. There was talent there, I suppose, from a young age. They could see that we could run. They could see that we could move fairly fast. And somebody from the community, as far as Castle Gregory, would come and pick us up and take us over to Castle Gregory for the day. And then if we were successful there, we'd get into to the big day in Tralee in Ossenstack Park for the 100 metres, 200 metres, whatever we were running in. My best was a bronze medal in the county championships. That was last.
From an early age, Maura was involved in sport.
I think it was always there, bit of the wild one in me. And I used to love, obviously we live right beside the beach in Brendan, so it was very easy to head off to the beach and just run. We were running for fun, to be honest. It was very natural at that age, in primary school age, it was all very, very natural. It just came to us. My sister Margaret ran in long distance races. I was the one who would run sprints. My brother, Mike, he would do high jump and long jump and anything he was given. So we were well able to give it a go. My younger brother, Huge, got involved as well. And I don't think my older brother did Christmas. Yeah, we were pretty involved.
And who were Maura's role models growing up?
And I always remember the lads, the great Kerry team, the John O'Keefe's, and I suppose would they have been my role models? Probably, because I didn't know much about basketball, which was my big sport. But those lads, and just being out there and going up the steps of the Hogan Stand, or being in Croke Park, watching those games, I suppose they were my role models. I can still hear Fred Cogley in the background on the radio when I was younger. And Reginald Gaeltachta would always be interested, I suppose, in interviewing us if we ever did anything that was good. But it wasn't a big thing, as in you have to go and you would go on training. It definitely, when I went to Clochteed back in 1977, I just took to the fact that there was basketball there. There was a fantastic coach, Tom Crowley, and it went from there.
Maura attended secondary school at Clochteed at Dingle. And it was here that she developed as an accomplished basketballer.
Basketball was the big thing. And as I went through the years, you're obviously 5 years in secondary school, I could see that there were certain people involved in cross-country running. Gave it a shot. Won't say as successful as the basketball, but then when you find your success in something, the others are only, you know, interfering, I suppose, really. So the Gaelic football or hurling never appeared there, or camogie. It just never took off there. So basketball was our big thing. So anybody who was anyway sporty, you either went running when it was sport time, or you went playing basketball. Mm. And we were very lucky. And I'll repeat his name again, Tom Crowley, from he's back in Ballyfirth, or living there. And he was just an amazing coach. He gave us the skills. He gave us the love of the game, probably, and the fact that you could leave the college at weekend. Leave Clochteed on a bus and head off for the weekend. That gave us something to aim for.
It was here that Maura developed friendships that would last a lifetime.
I absolutely loved it. Just had a reunion there last weekend with some of the girls that I played with, played basketball with, played all kinds of sports with. And we had an absolute brilliant weekend. We had a great class. There was definitely from that era. A good friend of mine, Breed, we were in first year together, and other people that you just meet up along, even from other schools. Now, you wouldn't be friendly with everybody, but you would definitely have a respect and an ask with them, we'll say, or a tie with them, yeah.
So what was it about basketball that drew Maura to the sport?
What did I love about it? As somebody said to me once, there's a smell of that ball. But it was the camaraderie, the fun, the crack, the getting out of school, the privileges you were given because you were able to play ball. I suppose there was a pride in it. I was very proud that I was able to do this. And I remember when I'd come home at you know, weekends, I'd head off for a run on the beach. But, you know, you'd naturally think of basketball as a basketball court. But here I was heading over the beach in Brandon with a basketball in my hand, dribbling it on the sand, sprinting through the sand because I wanted to be one of the best. And I can still remember that. It was a drive. Where did that come from? I think I just looked up to the ones that were ahead of me in school. Then as I went through secondary school into college, I could still feel that dream. It's going to come. And I felt if I train hard enough, and I'm always saying that to my nieces and nephews, even the kids at school, train and you'll get there.
It wasn't long before Maura started to progress through the ranks.
And I suppose into my second year in Clostida, we went to these trials. I was asked to go to these trials. And I remember the coach coming over and saying something really positive to me. And I turned to my classmates, my schoolmates, and I said, do you think I'll make it? And I actually made the Kerry team that time. And that, to me, meant I could go on. From that Kerry team then, I was selected on the under-15 Irish team. It progressed naturally then. I suppose I kept training hard. I never lost my place on any of the teams up under 17, under 19 and into senior. And from Clostida then, this guy in Tralee, Shawnee Burrows, I'm sure who lots of people know, he asked me would I be interested in playing National League, having finished Clostida, and I was heading for Limerick to college. And I thought, God, this is a great opportunity. Yeah, I'll do this. And that turned out to be the team Lee Strand that people know about and very popular in the 80s in Tralee. We started off as Eagle Lodge Basketball Club. We started off in Division 2, Team Hartnett. Brendan Hartnett used to be our sponsors. They're still around, Hartnett's Meats. Then we went on, Lee Strand then took over as our sponsors. So we were known as Team Lee Strand, Tralee.
Maura represented Ireland at all levels. So can you remember what it was like putting on the Irish singlet for the first time?
I can. I was an under-15 player, I suppose, heading off on a plane over to Wales. We were heading off, and that was like even just getting the jersey, getting the shorts, getting the gear. And it was limited because there wasn't a lot of money in basketball at the time. But we did get the trip. And in fairness, I remember being at home one weekend. And my parents knew that I was sporty, but they had no idea that I was that good. So I remember it was a Friday evening and I was shaking a lot in the seat telling them I made the Irish team. And that was like, I was wondering how they were going to react, because again, they wouldn't have, you know, they were working, good, hard working people out in Brendan, small farmers. And it was a case of, well, you're going to have to get to training. How are you going to get there? Because everything had to be planned. And I was obviously young, I was under 15, but in fairness, I got a lot of support from the college. I got a lot of support back then from Tomás Garvey, who's still around, and I remember him sponsoring me as a student in Clostida to get me to the trainings. So whether it be a taxi into Tralee, some of my fellow students' parents used to put me up in Tralee. And then I had another teammate here in Tralee, Bernie Stowling, who went to Maidowell School. I would often stay in their house before we'd head off for Dublin for training. There was great support.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
You're welcome back to Terrace Talk. Time now for part two of our Kerry Women in Sport episode this evening, which features Maura Neeline.
You're listening to an episode of Kerry Women in Sport, where we hear the story of Maura Neeline, recognised as one of the top female basketballers of all time. When Maura was playing at senior level, there was a very vibrant national club scene.
When we were competing, there were teams from all over the country, right? So we headed for Mayo, Bella. There was a team in Galway, Corrib. We went as far as Belfast, Sporting Belfast. So, you know, that was an interesting trip. A bus leaving Tralee bright and early in the morning, up through Belfast. The troubles were on, troubles were there, and negotiating our way through the soldiers, checkpoints, all that. Sporting Belfast were the name of the team. Dublin had about three or four teams at the time. We went from Division 2, first year, into Division 1, straight into Division 1. And Cork. Waterford came on board then. So you had a nice, good round selection. Limerick weren't strong at the time. You had a nice selection of trips every weekend. And that was a commitment, because while your friends, we were now in college, your friends were heading off for the weekend, we were heading off on the bus.
One of the first major successes for Maura as a teenager was the National Cup.
There was a team in Dublin at the time, Meteors. There was another team, Nervura. There were other teams as well. And all of a sudden, we had made this breakthrough from Division 2 into Division 1. And we took Cork by storm that weekend, because we beat, I think it was Castledermot, that was another team that was involved, in the semi-finals. We were in the final and we actually dethroned the Dublin teams at the time. It was brilliant excitement. It was amazing. We had won the cup. We had won, you know, the national title. And from there was a lot of success then through the 80s. It was probably the mid-80s into the start of the 90s, when the team started to dissipate and obviously, you know, things went in a different direction.
When Maura was playing for Tralee Lee Strand, they had a huge following.
We used to play in the complex, and there were times we could fill the complex. Now, not like Garvey's fill it at the moment, but we did a good job in filling all those seats and people coming to support the games. You got a good standard of basketball. And we didn't have, you know, we didn't always have the men's team playing after us or before us or anything. They were actually coming to see women's basketball. And there were times I looked at some of the, you know, the Irish underage games, and there was good crowds there in Belfield, wherever we were. There was good support for it, because there was some good talent. There were some brilliant players from Dublin. Obviously, ourselves here in Kerry, we were pretty of a pretty good standard. And then you had the Blarney girls, the Cork girls, Galway, Bayo. There was a nice selection right around the country. Yeah. The players were coming from all over. If they were spotted in school, Shawnee Burrows and Jimmy Diggins knew where they were, approached them and lured them in. So we had Mary Jo Curran, who everybody knows from Beaufort, footballer. She played with us for a while. Mary Savage here, who was a great player through Ballinock School. Bernice and Karina Dowling, and there were lots of people that I haven't mentioned there. Deirdre Toomey from Ballymac, I played with her in college, and then the next thing we found she was here in Tralee playing with Tralee. So there was a lot of connections that you made, right? Clash Deeda was a big one. There was obviously two or three of us from that school that played on in Tralee, and it depended where you went as a player. You know, because Eilish Nalera now was a great Clash Deeda girl, but she went to Dublin to college. So then you played your basketball with a Dublin team.
Maura has many fond memories of playing with the national team.
I have a lot of them, because it gave me a great opportunity to travel. So we went to places in Asia, we had tours in America. Obviously we had the equivalent of Six Nations here, but it was only Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales. And then came the Promotions Cup, which was for smaller nations before all these European championships, which I also competed in. So I suppose you always wanted success. So when we used to head off into the European championships, there'd be qualifying rounds. You really were up against it. I was taller than their small players. and I was one of the tallest on the Irish team. But one of my highlights was, I suppose, when I was made captain back in 89, we headed off to Luxembourg for the Promotions Cup. At the time, there was, you know, teams from different parts of Europe. They would have probably smaller populations than the likes of England, Germany. And we came back as winners. That was a great achievement, because it isn't often as an international basketballer you go abroad and come back with a win, but that was a brilliant win. And one of my, probably when I, as a rookie, we played in European Championships in Dublin, and we had a great tournament. I remember playing in Belfield, great crowd there, great atmosphere, and we came runners up to Norway in our group at the time. So that was another great achievement.
In addition to playing basketball at such a high level, Maura also played Gaelic football for Austin Stacks, playing in a county final, marking the legendary Kerry midfielder Mary Jo Kern.
Would you believe I played the football with Austin Stacks in Tralee during my basketball career? So I didn't play it for a long time, but I played it for... a period of time where Stacks were successful and won the county championships, beating Beaufort back in, I'm not sure what date it was, but I'm sure it's on the medal.
Maura stopped playing basketball at the relatively young age of 25.
I stopped playing basketball when I went abroad in 1991. My mum passed away and I thought I needed something new, so I headed for the Middle East. I was 25.
And does she regret the decision?
No, I haven't, because I was never going to give up playing sport. I thought, well, I'll continue basketball over here for a few years. I'll be back after a year or two, as I told my dad when I was leaving. 9 years later, I returned. But it didn't stop me playing basketball, or it didn't stop me playing sports over there. So I have definitely no regrets.
Although Maura had retired from basketball, she didn't retire from sport. When she arrived in Abu Dhabi, it wasn't long before word went around that a national athlete was in town.
Abu Dhabi is a small town, that's where I headed. And all of a sudden, I suppose, people are talking, so they heard there was an international basketballer arriving in town. Basketball wasn't a big sport there, but netball was. The connection, I suppose, with England years ago and the Gulf States. So I was approached, would I be interested? And I said, yeah, I'll give that a go. But it was great. So every week we had league within Abu Dhabi, and then there was an Abu Dhabi selection then, which played in the Intergulf Championships. Again, as Abu Dhabi, we were very successful at that, and it was just amazing just to travel around the Gulf to places like Bahrain, Dubai, Oman. Even just getting to know a new sport, it was very enjoyable.
There were many things that Maura loved about playing competitive sports.
Teammates and the crack and the camaraderie and the winning, definitely. Where I got that from, I'm not sure. The drive, there was a drive in me. That drive, you know, has taken me through bits of life as well lately. But, you know, even in Abu Dhabi, then there was an opportunity to go playing rugby sevens. Now, rugby sevens is a really fast game, for those of you that know it. It kept you really active. There was a great rugby club out there. And then what happened as the years went on, it got so popular that there was an Arabian Gulf ladies rugby sevens squad selected to go and play in the Hong Kong sevens. And again, I made that. And before I was finished, I captained that team before I came back to Ireland. So I suppose I was always driven to be better than I thought I was. And yeah, that drive kept me going.
After a number of years away, Maura returned to Kerry, and again, sport came calling.
When I returned from Abu Dhabi, I played locally for a little bit. And I remember going to join Blenerville football for a while. And the speed was declining. And I felt the young ones were flying past me. So I was 35 at this stage, having returned. So I decided, okay, I will do something else. So I got involved in community games in Castle Gregory. I also coached in Presentation Primary School here in Tralee. So I did basketball, I've done volleyball with them, I did a bit of soccer with them, I did Gaelic games with them. So anything that we could do, I put the effort in there. And I can honestly say I gave that up when COVID came around and something happened in my own life, in my health, that I'm just back at school, so I decided it's time for me now. Done enough. But in any school I was involved in, even out in the Middle East, I used to train the basketball teams.
So was women's basketball given the recognition it deserved when Maura was playing? And how has it changed from then to now?
With the basketball in Tralee, definitely the town was behind you. And people recognised you walking up and down that street. We were well supported. We were well sponsored. I have nothing but admiration for the people around us. Now, we probably generated that ourselves as well. We had some very good Americans come in, Mary Ann Walsh being, you know, a name that was, she became part of us. And the players that I played with were, just, we were entertainment value. There was good basketball being played. Obviously, we got on the national broadcaster RTE when it was finals weekend, cup finals weekend, but we were never live. The men's was live. Men's, you know, was live by the 1990s, and we were always shown the following week. So, like, looking at today and the Irish soccer team and, you know, even the basketball itself, it's live the whole weekend. You have TG Cahir there, the great promoters of sport, RTE as well, which are doing a good job with the ladies at the moment, and, you know, well deserved. Well deserved. It's wonderful, really, to see it. It's wonderful the opportunities they're given and the fact that they can play, you know, one sport and then swap over into another one and be good at them. The only thing I would say there is, why are we so good? Are the numbers still low? And is that where we need to, you know, probably remain active and get as many girls out there? But I think the, you know, the success abroad, the golfers, the soccer players at the moment, just the coverage that's been given, I think will encourage more to get involved.
In a list published in the Irish Examiner in 2015 of the top Irish female basketballers of all time, Maura was named number 11, a fantastic achievement for the West Kerry native.
And that came out in 2015. And, you know, 2015, that was a lot of years after I finished. And I thought, oh my God, that's, you know, that's pretty good to see that I was still up there with the top basketballers in the country. I was very proud of it, silently proud.
Well, another fascinating story there, this time Marnie Lyne on Kerry Women in Sport, of course produced by Joe McGill and Connie Broderick here in Radio Kerry. Another fantastic series of those episodes, eight in fact, hard to believe 8 weeks are gone since we played the first one of them, but fantastic nonetheless. And thanks very much for Joe and Connie for producing those, and especially here for Terrace Talk as well. Of course, you can find them all online for those of you who maybe miss out on a couple that we had over the last couple of weeks. You can get them all on the Radio Kerry website, radiokerry.ie. But that's all we've got time for this evening. I hope you enjoyed this evening's show. Of course, the review of that brilliant win for Kerry over Tyrone, and of course the Kerry ladies as well over Cavan, and looking forward to that Ballyfinnan hill climb as well, and best luck to Sean Moriarty and all involved with Kerry Motor Club. Donald Barry is back in the hot seat next week. I'll be missing next week. I'm off to Silverstone to the Formula 1 Grand Prix, heading off on Thursday, so very much looking forward to that. So you'll be back with Donald for a full preview of Kerry against Derry. It's good night from us. Mary Comer's up next. Thanks to Keane on sound. We'll talk to you again very, very soon.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee.